Welcome to the Safety and Risk Success podcast with me, Christian Harris. My guest today is Ian Cook of Nebosch. Ian has been working in the education, health and safety and business fields for a number of years, and he's really passionate about education, learning, development and training. And that's the topic of today's podcast, all around training in the field of health and safety. What's been going on in the past? What are the current trends? How's Nebosch supporting that? There's a new product or a new service that Nebosch have just launched, and we delve into that as well. And then what's the future look like? So we get into augmented reality, micro learning, and various other things as well. Really enjoyed this chat with Ian. Thoroughly nice guy, as you'll hear or see if you're watching this. And certainly if you're in a corporate, I'd recommend checking out the Nebosch endorsed service, which we will link to in the show notes. Let's get into it then and join my conversation with Ian. Cheers.
Welcome to the Safety and Risk Success podcast with Christian Harris. We believe that proactive safety and risk management powers business performance. Each week we explore this theme, sharing guests, stories, insights, trends, hints and tips. You can find us on all the major podcasting platforms, and video versions are available on YouTube. But for now, let's join the conversation with Christian.
Thanks for joining me today, Ian. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Thanks, Christian. Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, good. Good to get you on. Got some interesting things to talk about. So, why do SHE professionals need quality training? What's your view on that?
Well, I think anyone who's involved in work, whatever their discipline, needs to have appropriate and challenging training that sort of pushes your knowledge to ensure that you have the correct information to apply when you're at work. Obviously, the skill of someone is applying that information in the right situation, but having the information in the first place is a key component. So I think training plays an integral part of people's development in that area. The broader the qualification, sometimes the more challenging they can be, the more information people can take away with them and then learn how to use that. Nebosch obviously prides itself on having qualifications that are not just broad but also targeted within specific hazard areas and particular industries. So I think training becomes an individual's choice about how they might go about that. There's a lot of different ways people can study, but essentially the transfer of information and knowledge is vital to a successful SHE manager.
Mm. I often use the analogy of a general practitioner doctor, whereby if you're going to the GP, you know, they need to be able to recognise and diagnose all manner of problems. They won't necessarily have the expert knowledge to sort of necessarily treat and solve that problem straight away, but they need to be able to recognise it. And I always think that is a great analogy for what a health and safety manager needs to be able to do in their career.
Absolutely. I think you're absolutely spot on there. That's a great analogy. And I think recognizing that limit of knowledge in some areas is part of competency. You cannot be an expert in all areas. And that's where it's such an interesting field, because you can really never know it all across the whole spectrum. But just having enough information is interesting and can be, it keeps it fresh, really. So yeah, great analogy there. Yeah, I agree.
You can steal that one if you like, don't worry. So over your career, because you've obviously delivered a lot of training as well, have you got any good examples where, you know, sort of there's been a best practice approach that's really worked, that's really excited or impressed you that you could share? Or I suppose conversely, any sort of horror stories where you've kind of gone into an organisation and found that actually the way they've been doing it in the past has been kind of very archaic and not hugely effective, and how has that been turned around?
Yeah, quite a lot of both ends, actually, unfortunately. But I think if I start with the challenging piece first, I think some companies feel that training is a tick box exercise. And I know we all say that, but what does that actually mean? I think it's just, oh, we know some people need some training, let's send them on it. And actually not spending the time, the company this is, not spending the time to look through that content, maybe sit on the course and actually look at this and say, is this up to date? Is this reflective of what we're doing today as a business? You know, there are examples where you might have had a training program running for years using an old document that's no longer actually used in the business. And that means the learners disconnect with the training almost immediately. They sit there, they see the trainer, they look at some old pieces of paper that think this is not reflective of what I'm actually doing. So they kind of lose faith in the training almost immediately. And that's a challenge. I get it in big businesses with large numbers of staff to constantly update every record. You know, if you're updating policies and procedures in your big system, then actually considering the training that people are getting might be an afterthought. So I think it is important to make sure that content is truly reflective of the real challenge. And actually sometimes not having too much in there is better. So a positive of that is actually simplifying the training to be more effective on two or three key points, rather than trying to pass over tons of information within a short session, because we know as humans that people just can't retain that volume of information. So I think a good training session is targeted, concise. And then for those that do want that further information and guidance, then there's an opportunity to get that, maybe not necessarily in that classroom on that day, but at a later stage. And that's how you then get the learning to be embedded back into the business further down the line. So I think there's some negatives and positives mixed up there to hopefully answer your question. But one thing I'll finish on, and for me, the number one positive from a trainer is to tell a story. So whatever your challenge is, whatever it is, whether it's manual handling, fire, chemical safety, the ability to convert that into a real life applicable scenario and then tell the story aids memory. It allows people to understand the logic to what you're trying to teach, and it allows them to walk away. And if they can just remember the story, then the detail follows. So I always try and break every learning concept into stories. It's a simple method, but I find it works.
Yeah. Very, very interesting, because we've got an upcoming episode with a barrister, and I was asking him, because I've already recorded it. I'm not predicting what's going to happen in the interview. I've already done it. But we were talking about how to be in the best position to defend a claim, you know, in court, whether that's a civil or a criminal case. And two of the key points he said were having a good story, but also when it comes to health and safety policies, I asked him, you know, is it better to have the world's best policy that you've put huge amounts of time and effort into, and it's hugely detailed and it ticks every single box and crosses every T and dots every I, but it's almost unachievably good? Or is it best to have something very short, snappy, simple that you know is going to be implemented? And he said, oh, absolutely the latter. So it's interesting that you're coming at it from the same perspective.
Absolutely, absolutely. Because, I mean, one of the things within law that a lot of people maybe overlook is the fact that you've got a safe system of work in place and a risk assessment. But if it's not reflective of what you actually do, that's no defence in a court, whether that's a policy, a risk assessment, a safe system of work. So if it is overcomplicated and people aren't actually following the process, then yeah, it's not worth the paper it's written on. You've ticked a box again, but in terms of defence, if it's not understood by workers, then it's not achieved its objective. I mean, some companies are actually moved away from paper-based policies and procedures and moves to more video learning and more interactive ways of communicating those messages. As long as the message gets across and then is followed, I think that's where enforcers are going to test you on as an employer, really.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that shift, because the next thing I was going to ask you about was kind of the trends in terms of the changes of how training's been delivered over the years. So, you know, have we moved from a very sort of academic, you know, lengthy, very detailed, you know, here's a big manual Bible to read, through to more interactive stuff now? I mean, what's your perception of that?
I think we have in some instances. I mean, it's such a broad spectrum education that, you know, it's good to have a variety of methods because it suits different people. So there isn't one always size that fits all. But I think you're right. There is a shift, even at the higher level, the very theoretical level of education. Chunking that information into smaller consumable pieces is not just good from a design perspective of how to get that information to someone from a training perspective, like it could be a video vlog or an infographic backed up by a huge manual, as you say. But if you chunk them into areas, it's easier to manage that. But that also applies equally to a simple message or a lower level training qualification. So I think those principles apply across the whole range, really. The changes, the evolution for me, humans haven't changed. We still have two ears, we still have two eyes, you know, we still have the same senses, and we still learn through the same methods. But the mechanisms how we get information to people have changed and evolved. So I think it's a lot more creative now, and I think it's a huge positive, because I was involved in some of the virtual classroom deliveries over the last few years, and a lot of people were very anti e-learning because of the effectiveness and the engagement. But actually, when you've got a tutor in a video and an interactive session, people were finding actually that they enjoyed it and they were getting some of the benefits of a classroom. Okay, it wasn't always as good, but in many cases it was comparable. But the benefit I found, which was amazed by, learners who would usually be very quiet and shy in a classroom had the opportunity to be involved in polling and quizzes and questions online. And they really found that they could engage more. And actually, as a tutor, I saw more responses from those maybe quieter members of a training room on a virtual classroom basis. There was more engagement from them, and they really did feedback that they found it more they had more confidence to be involved, if that makes sense.
Mm. Yeah, that's very interesting. Because there's lots of sort of hidden benefits of this shift that we've seen that you don't often think of, and I wouldn't have thought of that, but it makes, as you say, it makes kind of perfect sense to me.
I think for me, it's the combination of those methods, and it's choosing the right method for the message you're trying to get across. So if you're doing a very high level theoretical piece, then maybe having a lecturer in a lecture style is suitable. If you're doing something obviously practical without the theory, that's a skill or a physical, then obviously practicing it and doing it on the work. So I think it's choosing the method that best gets across the content that you have to give, really. And I know that sounds a bit of a woolly answer, but that's why it's important that the people who are delivering it are competent in designing training and delivering it.
I suppose the one shift that I would maybe suggest is maybe that we struggle with focus perhaps as much as, you know, we used to. I think so everybody's attention is very up for grabs, and everybody's so busy and non-stop, and so actually having that maybe totally slightly agree. Sort of crisper sort of training is there's a benefit to that, because it's more digestible and more likely that people will actually do it.
Totally agree. And I think, let's be honest, we've all been on face-to-face training where it finishes at 3 o'clock based on the fact that everyone expects it to, and people's attention spans struggle after that amount of time. And I think if you go online with that, if you try and replicate that sort of longevity of time in a classroom online, it's even harder for people to stay focused. So I think you're right. The way people consume information now is fast, it's quick, it's info. And I think you have to kind of replicate that. The future generation of learners coming through now will expect content to be almost like what they see on their phones. They want that sort of engagement, that wow. That's a challenge to the profession of trainers and educators, because they've got to keep their content fresh and engaging. I agree. I think that goes back to my point earlier, I think, about the content being more micro and bite-sized in chunks, and also the ability to then tell a story, because that story can evolve the content as well and bring it together. So if you have got a lot to get across, the story can tie it together, really.
Mm-hmm. I mentioned this book in a podcast recently, last week's podcast, I think, with Jill Dixon from Gerald Eve. But there's a book I like. It's called 7 Stories That Every Salesperson Must Tell. And it gives you frameworks for telling stories, which are really good for engaging people. And I think actually in a training environment, that works. That works very well, too, is having these kind of frameworks of stories and giving
examples. I'm making a note of that one now, Christian. Thank you.
to sort of bring it to life a bit. So I know a couple of people sent me messages on LinkedIn after the podcast saying, oh yeah, I've bought the book. So be interesting to see if they had a spike of orders from safety professionals in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, it is. That's so true. It is. It's just, it's the ability to engage and inspire people with information, isn't it? And pass it on. And with a safety professional, it's hard, because sometimes the information is very factual. And you do have to stick to kind of, you know, data, standards, laws, regulations, and it's quite hard to jazz that content up. But if you can and create scenarios or characters or aware of case studies, you mentioned legal aspects earlier, if you can bring it to life through real case studies where humans have fallen foul or put in things that have protected people well, then that can inspire people to think, oh yeah, this is a real thing, it's not just some numbers on a page.
Definitely. So you're in your sort of second spell with Nebosch now. How has sort of Nebosch historically helped then in this regard? You know, what has Nebosch traditionally done in terms of a role to support with training, and then how has this kind of developed over the years that you've been involved up to this point?
Yeah, well, I think traditionally Nebosch has been involved heavily within education, as most people will know. That's what we're kind of synonymous with. We've developed a range of qualifications that have had broad input from HSE, the regulator, to other regulators such as Office for Road and Rail, local authority and industry. So many people contribute to the content that goes into NEBOSH qualifications, plus our learning partner network, which is very extensive globally, our examiners. So therefore, it's always had a great network of people that contribute to the qualifications and the type of content that should be in there. You know, what are the challenges safety professionals are facing? And therefore, I think the syllabuses are fantastic. I would say that, I suppose. I've always been proud of my time with NEBOSH and proud to be back here again for a second time. I think where NEBOSH is now, it's evolving into the sense of there are other things that we can do, and it's recognising these shifts in learning. And so there's other things we can do, particularly with corporates, who are a key stakeholder within NEBOSH's world, because they recognise NEBOSH quals as being fit for purpose and people who hold them as being competent and well qualified. So actually, can we do more with corporates on the softer side? Hence my corporate services launch recently, where we're trying to develop in-company training approvals for corporates, where they're looking to develop learning impact. Mm-hmm. And I think that learning impact is really important for corporates. So it's an area we're going to expand into. We're going to do more. We're going to keep looking at edutech, what services are out there, and we're going to try and help corporates not just deliver large qualifications for individuals, but actually look at softer training across the piece for larger number of employees.
Yeah. In terms of learning impact, then, how would you sort of measure or quantify that, or are some of those impacts less sort of quantifiable and more qualitative?
Yeah, some are qualitative and some are quantitative. I mean, you do get challenged on this area by practitioners, because it's a hard area to measure. But if you can show there is a change, an effective change, where learning has shown to improve or impact upon performance, then there is a measure there that we can use to show there has been a positive change. Mm-hmm. Some of those might be qualitative, some of them can be quantitative in terms of lost time injuries or, you know, inspections or behavioral changes in terms of compliance observations and things like that. But the key thing is not to overcomplicate it. It's a bit like the training analogy we spoke about. It's actually being very clear about what it is you want to change, and then choosing one measure to show that change has taken place or been influenced by the training. And if that's a positive influence, then it's a positive story.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes people try and do two or three measures, or they can overcomplicate things. Or sometimes, I did have a comment recently, I hope the person not listening doesn't recognize this, but it was a good one. We had a laugh. I mentioned that actually a manager should check the learning has taken place by observing workers in the workplace. And they said, oh, we'll have to check. You know, that's a change in role for the manager. I said, no, supervision's a legal requirement. Managers do have to check their workers are doing it. So it's just part of their day to day. It isn't something new they should be doing. So there are different measures. It doesn't always have to be through assessments, tests and quizzes. It can be through observation as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I suppose actually the really important stuff is, are they the people that have had the training living and breathing and doing it, rather than necessarily have they passed a test? Because if you could pass a test and then not actually implement, you know, the stuff, couldn't you?
Exactly. And I think that's where there's this place for this in the workplace. It's this softer learning impact, where you can look at actual workers changing the way they work or actually complying with it. And just trying to reinforce that, just improved numbers. Even if you only affect 10% of workers, like a compliance, putting a safety hat on, it's still better than it was. And therefore, you know, actually, we see an improvement or a risk reduction within the business. Insurance companies recognize this. They see learning impacts as a way of reducing a premium.
Yep.
So it's certainly mathematically proven.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I think it's something that people often forget, that insurance companies, you know, would rather have lower premiums and lower claims. You know, as long as they get their margins right, then that's fine. But they'll often work with you to try to improve safety outcomes. So it's always something, that a bit of a hidden secret that people overlook sometimes.
Exactly. It's not an absolute. You know, we can't say that after this training no one's going to have an accident.
No.
Yeah. We that's not realistic.
No. That would be nice, wouldn't it? If you could guarantee, you know, do this and then you'll have no accidents ever again. But yeah, as you say.
That's it. And most people familiar, most people familiar with safety listening to this will know the Bradley curve and sort of the cultural piece and the behavioural piece and how you squeeze that last bit of safety out of performance. Yeah. And I think we are there, and therefore the techniques we're going to have to apply now to really get to zero, if that's the true goal, then they are going to have to be innovative. We're going to have to recognise there may be fine margins. Was it David David Brailsford for Team Sky that talked about, you know,
cycling,
marginal gains, very small marginal gains, really. Could spend weeks and hours, I suppose, just trying to shave a millisecond off a race time. We may be at that stage within safety now. In some companies who are very culturally mature, have invested millions into physical controls and campaigns, the gains might be quite small for some of the investment, but we can show that there is a possibility to improve further.
So with that in mind, then, I was particularly keen to get you on to talk about NeBosch Endorsed. Would you want to give us a quick overview of what that is, how it works, some of the benefits?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, thank you. NeBosch Endorsed is a service where NeBosch can approve in-company training or campaigns that look to improve safety performance. So it's an ability for a company to have already an existing program. They may have one that works really successfully, but would like that external recognition. So NeBosch can endorse that program, put a logo on it, help work in partnership with them to communicate the benefits. And obviously, the company gets a lot of benefit from demonstrating to their staff they've invested in this. It's a serious program, and they can externally promote that to any shareholders or stakeholders that they're working with NeBosch to improve health and safety performance within their business. We can also help corporates in the sense of if they don't have an existing program, we can help design it from scratch. And this is where it's very interesting from my perspective, because designing it from scratch can mean that we really consider learning impact from the very beginning. We can focus in on what they're trying to achieve. And with our network of partners that we have, we've got some great experts all around the world in pretty much most of the industries you can think of. And we can bring that expertise along with solution partners in edutech and learning design and bring those to the table to really give a world-class solution to a corporate. And I'd like to think, you know, we're really trying to be cutting edge with that. So that's the plan. We're quite flexible in how the content is brought to us. It can be anyone out there, as long as it meets the certain criteria and the strict criteria we have around learning impact and the quality controls we'd expect for a good learning program. Otherwise, we're very flexible. We just want corporate to have that opportunity to badge their in-company training.
So they're trying to scale up the impact, I suppose, and get in front of a bigger audience in some different sectors and different companies.
That's it. And we're offering sort of, you know, free consultancy at the moment to companies that are interested in this, but don't quite know how to go about it. And it's quite interesting talking to companies. They don't always know what measure they really, truly want. They know they want to improve behavior, so they design a great behavioral safety course. But actually, again, let's just focus back on, why are you doing this? Why are you running a behavioral safety course? What was the reason you decided to do this? And actually then trying to make sure that is the reason we're doing, and then we can measure that at the end of this program.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting conversation. I'm really enjoying my work at the moment.
Yeah, so it's quite a new thing. It was launched a week or so ago.
It was. Yeah. It must be at the top of my head now. It must be about 10 days old.
Yeah.
So I think it was 25th of April, if I should remember that date.
Probably been working towards it for a long time. But how's it been received so far?
Yeah, the feedback is excellent. You know, I think people can see what we're trying to do, and you can see we're doing it for corporates. This is a service focused purely on the customer. It's all about the customer getting something what they want. And obviously, where NeBosch will gladly support our learning partners in helping their customers as well. So it's very altruistic. I think it's very charitable. And I think it's trying to do the right thing. So from everyone's feedback so far, it's very positive, really.
Okay, glad to hear it. Yeah, and it's always best to have the customer in mind when you're creating a solution or a product or a service or something. I think quite often people get caught up with, well, we do this, and
exactly,
you know, this is what we can help with, and actually not thinking necessarily about, as you say, going back to the basics here. What are we trying to achieve? Why are we doing this from the customer's perspective? And let's empower the customer.
The hard part of that then is marketing it, because the challenge is then communicating that. If you've really looked at it from the customer's perspective, and there are lots of different customers out there, then how do you get one message to go back out once you've launched it? So it's been a challenge on the communicator, but hopefully what they see is the simplification of it is, we will endorse your internal programs and training. But how they get to that, they could already have an existing course that they just want us to look over. And if it meets that criteria we've just said, great.
That's fine.
We'll endorse.
Great. Well, that's very, very exciting. And hopefully some of the audience will, you know, lots of the audience are coming from these corporate backgrounds. So, you know, perhaps they'll reach out and have a chat with you about it. Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
So looking forward then from here, do a bit of stargazing. What do you see, you know, the next sort of 10, 15, 20 years in developing like in terms of health and safety related training? You know, are we going to be doing everything on VR headsets? Are we going to be doing sort of like micro learning where we're doing 10 second TikTok videos? I mean, how do you see that going?
Good question. Yeah, I mean, I think micro learning will continue to evolve. I think it's probably a little bit horizontal now. I think we've got a lot of the technologies out there. It's probably utilizing it more. I don't think we've really explored all the technology we currently have at our disposal today. Mm. I think safety, from my experience, I was involved in education before I came into safety. And I'm afraid to say, I think safety is 4 or 5 years behind educational best practice in some of the other industries. So if we wanted a short-term view of the future, we could look into, you know, corporate training for leadership and finance and in some cases HR and L&D best practices to see where safety will probably go next. To look beyond that, I've got a sneaky feeling I think gamification is going to be becoming more powerful. As the cost of developing games comes down, then it's a bit like the story I was telling. If you can immerse somebody into that story and get them to be in the story and then make decisions as they progress through the story on their own by learning it. And some of the tech I've seen actually can decide if someone's a very good learner, very strong learner, the choices they get are at this level of learning. If they're not so good, or if this is a new topic to someone, then the information presented to them is part of education and teaching them to get up to that. And the next time you play it, you're at the high level. So I think that logic to it, you can't do that in a classroom. And I'm not saying the classroom will have no place in the future. I still think classrooms will have a huge place in the future. But what you'll probably do is have a few days in the classroom, meeting your colleagues, doing practicals, having a chat, seeing humans. But then you'll go away and do this kind of gamification type interactive stuff in your time, in your own time, consumed when you can, really.
Yeah. Some of the stuff I've seen, only limited amounts of it, but some of the stuff I've seen around virtual reality and augmented reality and some of the headsets and, you know, and all that stuff is obviously expensive right now. But if you think of, you know, a flat screen TV or a laptop or whatever, and you think how much that would cost 10 years ago versus now, you know, you can get a massive flat screen TV for £400 nowadays, whereas it was probably £4,000, wasn't it, 10 years ago. So I think
absolutely
all of that stuff will start to become more accessible.
One of the VR companies I've been talking to, who we work with, they're experts at what they do, a lot of very high risk type scenarios that they recreate. They actually post the headsets out to delegates and groups. So the cost is really a postage and packaging cost, and they've got a really good fix. So there are ways around these things. I think you're totally right. And again, it goes back to, is that the right method for the learning? If it is, then there's often a way to get that sort of experience across. Sometimes I've designed, part of endorsed actually, one of the pilot programs. One of the pilots on day 3, I think it is, they're all going to attend a local session in a set location and have actors and VR and a bit of stuff. So it's part of a bigger program. No, it's exciting.
Yeah, very exciting stuff. Be very, very interesting to see how this continues to progress over the next few years.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, health and safety certainly wants to keep evolving in that area. Because we have to stay relevant, because businesses will look at the value safety adds back into the business and the effectiveness it gives, really, not just as a tick box, but actually from a quality perspective, from a performance perspective, from a lost time perspective. So the more engaging, the more value we can get back out of this, the better it is for the industry as a whole.
Absolutely. And funny enough, this coming, I don't know if you know this, but I run every Wednesday like a safety roundtable, which is a Zoom session. and where we, you know, get 20, 30, 40 people and just chat through a topic. And this week we're going to be talking about what I've coined the 4 P's of proactive safety and risk management. And that's all about, how do you demonstrate what are the benefits you get from being proactive and doing it properly? And how do you sell that into the board and all that stuff? So, yeah, I think you're spot on with that analysis.
Yeah, I mean, that is the people are talking a lot more about risk and opportunity now. And I think from when I, you know, I'm so young, obviously, but when I started in safety 15, 20 years ago, it was all risk. It was always negative. It was red on a risk assessment table. Now we're talking about opportunity, which is a different concept, isn't it? And it's how you balance that risk and opportunity. And as a safety professional, that's quite a challenge for them to look at it that way.
Yeah, it is. It is. I think that it's interesting because if you look at sort of SHP, for example, they post out on LinkedIn and Twitter and everything every month, you know, these are the top most read articles, and they're always the fines, the serious incidents, you know. So it does seem like within the industry, kind of looking in sort of in an insular way, we're still focusing more on the red side of things rather than the green. But, you know, I'm sort of all about trying to that's one of the reasons to do the podcast, really, is to try to sort of share some of this positivity and try and get people to think a bit bigger and a bit sort of more profoundly about, you know, the benefits of getting it right.
Absolutely. And I think you can turn it on its head. So instead of like 3 by 3 on a risk assessment, it's 9, and we know 25 is worst. Could we not say actually positively that we're controlling that to 16? So well done to the company. You're actually 16, but you could be better. There's an opportunity to be 24 if we've got to have one on a score sheet, obviously. So there's an opportunity to improve it by this. And I think turning that round can help the mindset a little bit. It's a play on numbers, but
no, I think it's interesting because you know, thinking about in my business, you know, engaging and influencing and trying to get people to take action in the world of slips, trips, and falls. Nobody wants to hear you're really bad at this.
Yeah.
Even if they actually are, nobody wants to hear that. Like, what they want to hear is, yeah, you're doing pretty well, but here's some ways to improve even further. Or here's, you know, we're at a good level. Let's try and aim for a great level.
Exactly.
So I think you know, it's always important to try to put yourself in, like we said about building your new endorsed product with the customer's needs in mind. It's the same kind of thing here, isn't it? Who are you trying to influence? Put yourself in their shoes. What do you want to hear? What don't you want to hear? What's going to actually prompt you to do something, or what's going to prompt you to think, oh no, I don't fancy any of that. Very, very interesting. Very interesting discussions to have.
And I think that's the modernisation of a safety professional, isn't it? Mm. I mean, I think it felt, if I just go back to some of my early days when I wasn't really qualified or competent in safety, but I used to meet some people who are very qualified. There was this kind of cultural thing that I felt, and I could be wrong, but this is just personal opinion. It felt as if safety professionals were like, no, you can't do that. And then when someone in the business would say, well, okay, we can't do that, but then what can we do? And it's like, not my job to tell you that. I just tell you, you can't do that. And then people would be like, well, thanks then. It was like business prevention unit, wasn't it? So I think that evolution of the safety professional and being an enabler to help the business get output, improve its reputation, see the positives, see the opportunities whilst managing the risk, being aware of the, I mean, they're, I suppose they'll always have to focus on the red side to an extent because that's what they're paid to do, but it is being aware of the opportunity as well and balancing the risk, isn't it? What appetite for risk does the business have, really, and how can you make it safe? One of the CEOs actually of Nebosch Past said something to me which I'll never forget. Safety allows you to do things. And that's simple words, but that's so true.
Now that's a great way to finish the podcast, I think. That's a very strong, very strong message. I like that. So if people want to, well, firstly, thank you for sharing your time and giving us the updates. If people want to learn a bit more, what's the best way to get in touch with you? Is it sort of LinkedIn, for example?
Yeah.
What's the best way for people to find out more about Nebosch Endorsed and sort of more on Nebosch generally?
Yeah, sure. So for me, yes, please connect on LinkedIn. Nebosch General, we'll have our website. And if you're interested in the corporate services that that I'm working on and some of the things we discussed today, we do have a corporate services page specifically on the Nebosch website that will talk you through those things. And that's probably the best way.
Yeah, perfect. Well, we'll put that link, that specific link into the show notes as well. So, you know, just in case it's hard to find. I know some websites are it's quite hard to navigate around them, so we'll pop that in. All right, Ian, well, thank you very much, really appreciate it, very, very much enjoyed it. I think, you know, some interesting topics and some great things for people to ponder on, so thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thanks for joining us, thanks for joining Ian and I, and we'll look forward to seeing you next week for another episode of the podcast. Cheers.
Thanks for joining us on the Safety and Risk Success podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, please hit follow and do share on social media. Does anyone you know spring to mind as a great guest, even yourself? If so, please contact us on podcast@slipsafety.co.uk. See you next week for another episode.